Chapter 9.
Give me a second, Cardenia said to Mars. The two of them were in the Emperor's personal office, where, Mars suddenly remembered, the two of them had first met, not all that long ago. In the now, they were alone, briefly, in the short interregnum between Cardenia's assistants leaving the office and them returning with the Emperor's next appointment in tow. Mars nodded. Getting into character?
It's not a character, it's me, Cardenia said. And, yes. Now hush.
Mars grinned at this and watched as Cardenia closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and did her transformation into Emperor Greyland II. To the outside eye, the transformation wasn't much, a straightening of the spine and a certain set of the face. But by this time, Mars had seen it enough that he understood that most of the transformation was interior, the change of perspective from personal me to imperial we. When Mars had first gotten to know the Emperor, which is to say in the period of time where they had become friends but had not yet become lovers, he thought the transformation a little bit amusing. Now he realized how much it was actually necessary, not just for Cardenia to define for herself the difference between her personal self and her public role, but for everyone else she ever dealt with. It was easy for people to dismiss Cardenia Wu Patrick, the young woman accidentally thrown into a position that she had neither wanted nor been groomed for. It was much harder to dismiss Emperor Greyland II. Well, harder now, Mars amended. It took a while, and the arrest for treason of roughly a third of the interdependency's ruling class, but Greyland had gotten there. Mars smiled to himself at this. He was pretty proud of his girlfriend. Greyland noticed the smile.
What is it?
I'll tell you later, Your Majesty, Mars said. When Cardenia was in Greyland mode, he made sure to treat her with the same level of courtesy as anyone else in her court. Maybe other imperial boyfriends in history used their position to be casual and louche, but that wasn't Mars. He wasn't sure he could be louche if he tried. Greyland nodded and motioned toward the door.
These two will not be enthusiastic about what we are going to ask of them, she said.
Mars knew the we here referred not to the two of them, but to Greyland alone. Mars was support staff. You're asking a lot of them, he said.
Yes, well,
Greyland said, and shifted her gaze to where her new guests would soon be entering.
We'll be asking a lot of everyone. They will be no different.
Yes, ma'am, Mars said. Greyland glanced over briefly at him, a small and private smile on her lips. Mars knew that she liked it when he went all formal. A door opened, and Admiral Ginny Hernan and General Luke Bren were brought in. Hernan ran the Imperial Navy. Bren ran the Imperial Marines. Normally, the two were attended by flocks of staff and body people. For this meeting, it was just the two of them. After introductions and pleasantries, Greyland's staff also disappeared, leaving only the military heads, the Emperor, and Mars. Mars watched as Hernan and Bren glanced briefly his way and equally as quickly turned their attention back to the Emperor. He had been introduced as Lord Mars Claremont, and his role as the Emperor's science advisor on matters regarding the flow was well known. It was also well known, if not generally publicly acknowledged, that he was the Emperor's friend, with all the various social complications, positive and negative, that came with that particular position. This did not trouble Mars especially. He got it. But it meant he was having a moment of quiet amusement watching these two immensely powerful people trying to figure out why he was present at this meeting. The three of them were three of the most powerful humans in the known universe. His presence at the meeting was either an Emperor's affectation or something else entirely. Mars enjoyed watching Hernan and Bren trying to figure out which it was. They'll find out soon enough, Mars thought. And as it happened, they found out almost immediately.
We need to send an armada to end, Greyland said to her military chiefs.
Sooner rather than later. Hernan and Bren shifted uncomfortably in their seats and looked at each other before Admiral Hernan cleared her throat.
There is a problem with that, Your Majesty, she said. You are going to tell us that the prophecies of Raykella will destroy any ship that emerges out of the flow at end, Greyland prompted.
Yes, Hernan agreed, and not just the Raykella. After the coup attempt against you, Navy commanders who were complicit fled to end with their ships and crews. There are now 13 additional ships of various sizes and capabilities on their way to end,
all presumably loyal to the Nohamapeetan family.
More than enough to monitor and defend every existing incoming flow shoal, Your Majesty, said Bren.
And we could not overpower them by numbers or arms? Greyland asked.
It would be difficult, Hernan said.
That is what we are told when someone wants to say no to us but feels they cannot.
Yes, Hernan said, but this time I actually mean it.
Then define difficult.
Ships, mines, shoal defenses, all deployed against anything that arrives within seconds. Civilian ships will be destroyed almost instantly. Our ships will survive initial contact, but if the Rebel ship commanders are smart, and they are, we trained them, they will take our ships apart in short order.
Can we not coordinate to have our ships arrive at the same time?
And present too many targets to destroy them all at once? Hernan shook her head.
No, flow shoals aren't wide enough to accommodate more than one or two ships at most, and even ships that leave hub space simultaneously may not arrive simultaneously. It's not an exact science.
Greyland glanced over at Marse at this. Marse knew why she did, and it was a little moment between the two of them, but neither of them said anything about it.
So, we are abandoning End to the Nohamapeetans, she said to Hernan.
No, ma'am, Hernan replied crisply.
But neither do we wish to commit our forces and ships to a plan that will expose both to unnecessarily high rates of attrition. You don't want your people to die.
Not if we can avoid it, ma'am.
Can you avoid it?
We're working on that.
Maybe we can help, Greyland said.
At this, Marse noticed something the Emperor had told him she was entirely expecting. A pair of tolerant and amused, and perhaps maybe just a little condescending, smiles on the faces of her chiefs. Hernan and Bren had momentarily stopped seeing Greyland and saw Cardenia instead.
We are always open to suggestion, Your Majesty, Hernan said.
Greyland turned to Marse.
Tell them.
Just after the attempted coup, I mentioned to the Emperor that I might have found a way to sneak into End, Marse said to the chiefs.
What?
General Bren said, confused. As the flow streams are collapsing, some new ones are opening. Temporary streams, through a phenomenon I and my late colleague, Hatid Roinald, called evanescence. These new streams last anywhere from minutes to years. My predictive models suggest an evanescent flow stream will be opening up into End.
Your predictive models?
Yes, when I first mentioned it to the Emperor, I had just newly modeled the data and my confidence in it was not high. I've worked on it since. My confidence is higher now.
How much more confident?
Confident enough that I would take a ship into it myself.
Lord Marse was the one who discovered the emergent flow stream to Dalla Cisla, Greyland said. He has since predicted other new streams, whose existences have been confirmed by local scientists. If he has high confidence in a prediction, we trust him.
Admiral Hernan had a brief expression cross her face, quickly removed, but nevertheless one that Marse registered. He knew it was, of course you're confident in his prediction, you're fucking him. Marse looked over to Greyland and noticed she'd caught it too, and that she didn't appreciate it even as she realized it was entirely fair.
Of course, neither Lord Marse nor we expect you to take our word for it. Lord Marse's data will be available for your own scientists to examine and verify.
Who else has seen it? Hernan asked.
No one, Marse said. When I informed the Emperor about it, she asked me to separate out that information from the data I was sharing with other scientists.
No one else has that particular data, and no one else's models have that particular evanescent flow stream appearing.
Unless someone else has seen it and kept it to themselves like you did, Bren said.
Marse nodded. That's possible.
The one thing I would say here is that for better or worse, every scientist working the data is working off models my father originated and that I refined. I know what the hole in my own public data looks like and how it affects the models derived from it. It's very small, mathematically speaking, but it's there. I'd notice if someone was hiding the same data I was. I'd see it in the models.
You're confident of that?
Marse shrugged. It's just math.
You understand that the fate of dozens of ships and thousands of my people will be riding on your math, Hernan said. It's more than that, Admiral, Greyland said. It's the fate of billions.
Yes, ma'am, Hernan accepted the correction.
However, it will be my people's fate first.
Greyland nodded.
If Lord Mars's data is satisfactory, then how long will it take to assemble the ships and plan a campaign?
Hernan turned to Mars.
In your model, where does the flow stream originate, and what's the transit time?
It originates in the Ikoyi system, Mars said.
That's the home system of House of Lagos, Bren said.
Yes.
Does this present issues, General? Greyland asked.
They're touchy. Let us handle that part, Greyland suggested. Bren smiled at this. Yes, Your Majesty.
The transit time to end would be 3 months, Mars continued. Hernan's eyebrows raised.
Really?
The trip from hub to end was a 9-month journey.
There's a catch, Mars warned.
What is it?
I predict the flow stream from Ikoyi to end will only be open for about 5 months.
When does it open?
About 3 weeks from now.
And we don't want to be in the flow stream when it shuts off, Bren said.
No, Mars said. Some flow streams collapse from one end or the other. Others collapse intermittently. Others collapse all at once. This will be one of those collapse all at once ones.
Hernan turned to Greyland.
What I'm hearing is, at best, we have 3 months to assemble and task a group suitable to retake end before that stream collapses and takes any ship still inside with it.
Yes, Greyland said.
Is it possible?
It's difficult.
There's that word again, Mars thought. Greyland had noticed it too.
That is not what we asked, she said.
Hernan grimaced. I understand that, ma'am.
Then let us be clear, Admiral Hernan, General Bren, Greyland said, fixing both with her eyes as she said their names. We have no intention of leaving end to the Nohamapetans. They are a threat to the current citizens of the planet, and they are a threat to anyone who flees there for refuge. Those refugees are already on their way, Admiral. There will be many more before all this is done. If this is possible, then we will have it done, difficult or not.
It's possible, Your Majesty, Bren said. But with all respect, you have to be aware of what you're asking. You're asking for a massive and sudden commitment of forces that will have to be assembled from the systems we can reach and which can send ships and personnel to the Ikoyi system in time to use the flow stream before it collapses. Every ship, every Marine, every crew member we send to end is taking a one-way trip. They are not going to see their spouses or families or children again. Everyone who joins the service understands they are making a commitment, one that takes them from home, sometimes for years. But Your Majesty, what you're asking here is for more than a commitment, in a very real sense. You're asking them to give their lives.
Greyland considered this. You think there will be mutinies over this order?
Bren looked as if he'd been slapped. I said no such thing, ma'am. The last bit of that was added hastily. Mars noted that Greyland deigned to let it pass.
It's not only the crews and Marines, ma'am, Hernan said. Those ships aren't coming back either.
She turned to Mars.
Unless you predict a flow stream exiting end space in the near future.
I don't, Mars said.
Hernan nodded. Then there are that many fewer ships we have for the unrest we all know is coming.
We can make more ships, Greyland said.
Your cousins are filling up their dance card quickly, Hernan said, referring to the House of Wu.
We're sure they are, Greyland said dryly.
However, we can make the argument that the needs of the Imperial Navy take precedence.
As for the crews and Marines, Greyland turned her attention back to Bren.
If we cannot return them to their families, then perhaps we should bring their families to them.
You're talking about sending these families to end, Hernan said.
Yes, after a suitable amount of time that would be required to end the Nohamapetan threat and to establish stability on end.
The logistics of that are difficult, yes, Greyland finished the sentence, as will be the logistics of creating the fleet that we send to end.
Admiral, General, please understand that we do not expect any of this to be simple or easy. Likewise, understand that moving forward, we do not expect anything to be simple or easy. We all have difficult choices to make and sacrifices that will be required of all of us. Perhaps you will be so kind as to lead by example.
Yes. Well, Hernan and Bren looked at each other again and then rose from their seats.
We need to go find out what ships and people are available to us on short notice. We will have that to you by morning. Thank you, Admiral, Grayland said. Hernan nodded to Mars. And you will send us over that data for our people to check. We need to go over that with a microscope. Yes, of course. You understand that if our people find anything questionable with your data, we can't move forward. Mars nodded. If your people have any questions, I will be happy to address them. The Admiral gave Mars a look that he was pretty sure translated as, "You better not be wasting my time, boy toy." Then there were the usual departing pleasantries, and then Mars and Grayland were alone again, for the minute or so it would take for Grayland's people to bring on the next appointment. Grayland sighed and looked over at Mars, and was Cardenia again. "I don't think they like the plan," Mars said. "I know they don't like it," Cardenia said. "That whole if there's a problem with the data bit was the Admiral trying to find a way out of it." "There's not a problem with the data," Mars assured her. "That doesn't mean they won't find a problem. And if they do, the math will show the problem is them, not the data." Cardenia stretched. "I wish I had your confidence." "I think you have enough. Not in myself. In them." Cardenia motioned toward the door. "I'm mildly annoyed they're already discounting your work because of your relationship with me." Mars grinned. "Oh, you noticed that. I was going to punch her right in her snout." "That probably wouldn't have been wise. It would have felt good for about 5 seconds. I'm sorry they doubt your work." "It's not your fault," Mars said. "It kind of is," Cardenia reminded him. "Well, fine, it's your fault, but I don't mind. Overall, it works out well for me." "I'm glad you think so, Lord Mars." Mars smiled again. "Thank you, ma'am." He stood up and bowed elaborately, which made Cardenia giggle. "Will there be anything else?" "Not at the moment." "Maybe later," Cardenia groaned. "Much later, because my schedule is ridiculous today. I'll be lucky if I'm done before midnight. Sorry." "It's fine. I have work of my own." "Yes, saving us all through mathematics," Cardenia smiled, "which is why I see so little of you these days." "It's not the only reason, Miss, I have meetings until midnight." "Sure, use my own words against me. Well, at the very least, when you take a break, think of me." "I'm probably not going to take a break before I collapse into bed." "Fine then, Lord Mars. Dream of me instead." In his sleep, Mars Claremont dreamed of mathematics. Mathematics were not the usual dream material for Mars. Most of his dreams, historically speaking, were the standard rehashing of the events of the last few days, in an inchoate, plotless manner, with or without pants. Occasionally, he would dream he was back at school, simultaneously being a student and teaching a graduate class on physics, once again, only intermittently wearing trousers. During the 9-month journey from end to hub, he'd hardly dreamed at all. Ship's crew told him that was not unusual, and they suspected that somehow the flow affected their sleep. And when he did, it was often of the hills of his province, green and calm, upon which Mars would stand. He never noted in these cases whether he was wearing pants or not. It did not seem relevant at the time. But now, math. Wild math, incomprehensible math. Math of the sort that would tease and puzzle the greatest minds of any age, much less his own. Mars could not have begun to describe these dreams to anyone. These dreams of math were not usually visual in any significant sense. It was not a question of seeing numbers or equations or anything else that Mars would have otherwise dreamed of. Nor were they focused on sound or any other usual sense. Mars's dreams were saturated instead with the nature and meaning of mathematics, the overwhelming presence of the discipline, the vastness of its influence, the pertinence of it for everything that Mars did and was, and for the civilization he wanted to preserve. Mars was not ignorant as to why he was dreaming of math. Math was encompassing nearly all of his life at present as he sifted through the centuries of data on the flow. He was looking for patterns or sense to how the flow interacted with normal physical space and how it might be induced, if that was the best word to use, to save billions from the fate of isolation and slow death. If the flow could be induced, it would not speak to Mars in any human language. It would speak to him in mathematics. The flow, it had to be said, was not easily induced. Nor could Mars reason with it, or bargain with it, or plead, wheedle, or threaten. The flow was not human,
or concerned with human things. One could anthropomorphize the flow all one wanted, but the flow would not agree or consent to it. It was literally alien to this universe. The only way to understand it was to take it on its own terms. And so Mars did, spending nearly the entirety of his days working the math, trying to solve the problems that only he had the experience to solve. It was, in its way, incredibly isolating. Mars was not lonely. He was in a relationship, and in his time at Hub and Xi'an, he had made friends and allies and professional colleagues. But for all that, he was mostly alone in his head. He saw friends less often. Colleagues would report findings or ask his advice on a particular problem with the flow and then recede back to their own isolations. He had once started to mention the isolating nature of his work to his girlfriend, until halfway through expressing the thought, he realized she was in fact the emperor of the interdependency. The isolating nature of his one thing was a molehill compared to the isolating mountain of the literally dozens of things she was also currently dealing with. He changed the topic mid-sentence. His girlfriend, the emperor, found his verbal fumbling charming. It all had to come out somewhere. It came out in Mars's dreams. His subconscious trying to solve what his conscious brain was finding unsolvable. Mars understood why he was dreaming, his mathematical dreams, and even appreciated it in an intellectual sense. It didn't make it less enervating. To work on mathematics all day and to dream of mathematics all night meant Mars woke up all mathed out, which normally would not be a problem. Mars could just take a vacation. But when civilization was literally on the verge of ending, vacations felt more indulgent than usual. So it went for weeks. Math awake, math asleep, math everywhere and all the time, with Mars no closer to a solution to the problems weighing on him. But this night, Mars had a different dream, which was still in and about mathematics, so that part wasn't any different. What was different was that for the first time, the dream was not generalized mathematical anxiety. In his dream, and rare for his dreaming experience, Mars actually saw an equation. It was as clear as it could be in a dream, which was to say full of shifting bits and squiggly lines that moved when you looked directly at them. Nevertheless, when he looked at the equation, he knew what it was describing. An unstable flow shoal, shrinking and receding at the same time, moving through space in a way that flow shoals didn't, or at least weren't supposed to, or ever did, except maybe once. Which is when Mars's conscious mind intruded into his dream. "I've seen this before," it said. "Where have I seen this before?" Mars snapped awake, sat up in bed, and reached over to his nightstand for his tablet. It lit up, awaiting his instructions. Murmured Cardenia, who, as she had promised, had come to bed well past midnight, only briefly acknowledging the mostly sleeping Mars before collapsing into her own pillow. "Bright." "Sorry," Mars said, and got out of bed, naked so the tablet glare wouldn't bother Cardenia. He settled in a chair and pulled up the files of data that his father had collected over 30 years. Data collected from the trade ships that plied the flow from one system to the next, registering the minute shifts and changes to the flow that could be gleaned by how the ships entered, moved through, and exited the medium. Mars was looking for one thing in particular, and very near the end of his father's data, he found it. An anomalous flow shoal, discovered by a ship that had accidentally exited the flow when the stream it was in experienced something akin to a rupture, spilling the ship into normal space, light years from where it was supposed to be, and trillions of miles from any system inhabited by humans. The ship had spotted the anomalous flow shoal and had raced toward it, barely entering it before it had closed in on itself. It had been a freak event, one of a kind, temporary, evanescent. "Holy shit," Mars said out loud. Cardenia repeated. Mars didn't hear it. He was on his way out the door, moving toward his office to start work. And then quickly back in the door after seeing the shocked expression of the imperial bodyguard outside the emperor's bedroom. Mars had been so wrapped up in his thoughts that he forgot he was naked. He grabbed a robe and was back out the door. Equations, real ones without squiggles, dancing in his head.